This is Scammapalooza, a podcast about lies, scams, and illusions and why we fall for them. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson. For more information on today's show, check out conman.com.au. And while you're there, why not sign up for our mailing list to find out about our new upcoming monthly show, Slight Night. This is going to be a close-up magic and scam show where you get to see illusions, close-up tricks, card cheating demonstrations, all performed close-up right under your nose. We have a fantastic purpose-built venue hidden in the Melbourne suburb of Northcote, which is yet to be revealed because it's a secret. It may possibly be illegal, we're not sure yet. But we're going to limit it to just 25 to 30 people a month, so sign up to find out about when these special secret shows are going to be starting. Also on this episode, please excuse my scratchy voice. I've just finished up at the Melbourne Magic Festival, where I performed The Confidence Artist, my show about how to become a professional con man, which was a lot of fun. I lectured at Swinburne University on the psychology of magic, and met an extraordinary woman who claimed that she doesn't have a blind spot because she's an energy healer, which was a phenomenal thing to discover, and also performed in a total of something like 35 different performances across the festival. So if I seem to fade out a little bit, that's the reason why. We are also talking on this episode about women in magic. After this episode was recorded, Carissa, my guest, went on to win Best Comedy at the Melbourne Magic Festival, and women won first place in the Junior Championship stage competition, and they also got first, second, and third in the close-up magic competition. So while we are talking about women in magic and the struggles that they are facing, clearly women are doing something right and the industry is slowly changing. Anyway, on with the show. I've always assumed that it must be hard to be a woman in magic. After all, it's an industry dominated by men and populated by old guys with outdated ideas of gender, young boys who got into magic to pick up girls, and antisocial men of all ages who struggle to talk to anyone, let alone members of the opposite sex. I mean, we have organizations like the International Brotherhood of Magicians. We have organizations like the Magic Circle that didn't even allow women to join until the 1980s. But is magic a hotbed of misogyny that sees women's only value as being sawn in half? On this episode of Scammapalooza, I talk to magician Carissa Hendricks about her extraordinary life and the challenges and benefits of being a woman in magic. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson. This is Scammapalooza. Welcome, Carissa. Thank you very much for coming on Scammapalooza.
Thank you for having me.
I was thinking this morning, I was feeling a bit bad about the fact I was interviewing you and I couldn't put my finger on it. And then I figured out I don't like you.
No. That makes perfect sense. No one does. As we will come to in this podcast.
As we will discover. My first thing is that I don't have a huge number of women on the podcast, because the subjects we talk about, just con artists, scams, deceptions, magic, tend to be people from law enforcement, academia, you know, this sort of thing, and they tend to be male-dominated fields. But also, it tends to be that when I bring women on, a lot of the time it's talking about things to do with women.
Oh, interesting.
You know, like it's sort of a woman's perspective on crime or fraud, rather than just saying, hey,
I'm a person,
yeah. And today you're here to sort of talk about, rather than talk about your many achievements, we're here to talk about the fact that you are a woman with a capital W in magic with a capital M. Is that a thing that happens to you a lot, that you become, you know, everything you do as a magician, it becomes seen through a filter of being a woman?
I think, surprisingly, no, because I have cultivated a career where that's not true. So I've been very fortunate to grow up in a magic community that sort of just saw me as a person and allowed me to participate in things. And, you know, I'm never identified as the woman in the room or the token lady. And then when I decided to be part of magic on an international level and I started going to conventions, that, you know, you walk into the room as a woman, especially kind of the way that I tend to dress when I'm at conventions, and it was just like, oh, there's the girl.
Yeah.
But very quickly, just my personality and kind of the way I am, that goes away, you know, and I think people tend to just forget I'm a girl pretty quickly. And then I've had the good fortune of working with people like Stan Allen at Magic Live, who has complete faith in me and my abilities and never comes up, and it never comes up, and it never comes up. And it's funny because what we're going to talk about in this podcast is something that for me sort of came out of left field, because I've been so fortunate to have been taken seriously and really be like you're a magician. And you know, within the community, at least, no one ever asked me about being a girl in the community.
Yeah.
Except for when I do interviews and then people go, what is it like being a woman in the magic community? And my response is always, I don't know. You should probably ask one.
Yeah.
And then we just move on. And it's a really nice, like, cute joke that they don't quite understand. But what I'm saying there is to say that I don't define myself that way. I don't think of myself as a woman in this community. I think of myself as a participant. And, you know, even though this new show I'm working on is very much a girl doing magic or a girl god, trickster god kind of character, I'm playing pretend. When I dress up like a lady, I feel as much like I'm playing pretend as when I dress up like a gentleman. So I just don't feel it at all day to day.
Do you think, well, actually, let's go back. So how long have you been in magic for? Because you said sort of growing up in magic to an extent. So what is your life story?
My life story. So there's sort of three beats to my magic life. I remember being a 6, 7, 8-year-old girl going to library club, putting books away, and I would watch these magicians, and I knew there was a couple of magic books in the library, and I was so fascinated by magic, especially stuff that was kind of spooky magic, you know, those spooky magic books they used to have. Yeah. I was obsessed with those. There were some magic tricks in my old questions and answers book, my old encyclopedia books. Mm-hmm. And I remember I would go around the library and I would hide cards in the card pocket, you know, the little card catalog pocket on the back of books for in a library. Hide cards. And I would remember where all the cards were. This is at 7 or 8. Mm. And then people would come and I would do a card trick and I'd force a card on them. And then I'd be like, it's in your book, because I would know what card was in what book. And, you know, that's 7, 8 years old. I'd slip them in the back of people's pockets and I'd wander around all day. And then I'd be like, it's in your pocket. I was just really into magic. But I was the only one in my school. It was a very strict academic school. It was a French immersion. And you know, it's fun to be a little performer. Mm. But eventually it becomes clear, like, okay, well, no one else is playing along, so I'll do something else with my time. And then a few years later, I got into training circus and doing theater, and I was about 15, 16, and then that year I got kicked out of the house, and I needed to make money, and I happened to be able to juggle and eat fire and spin poi and, you know, dance and stuff, and that was the easiest way to make money and still go to school, so I started doing shows, and pretty quickly, a couple of magicians saw me at a little haunted house gig and picked me up as an assistant. So beat two of my magic career was being a box jumper. And I went...
So those who don't know, a box jumper is the assistant who gets sawn in half, climbs in and out of the boxes.
The typical magician's assistant.
Yeah.
But I was, you know, oddly enough, even being like 16, 17, 18, box jumping in my community, I was treated with a lot of respect. They knew I had a theater background. They let me block the shows. I had a lot of say. It was great. And then I kind of got swayed by sideshow. I got a couple of really great mentors.
You got seduced by carnies.
I got so seduced by carnies.
Like chapter 4.
And I ran away.
Something wicked this way comes.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, you know, and it just paid way better than being an assistant. And I got way more creative control. And I started doing jokes. And
so what sort of sideshow stuff did you do?
Oh, I did everything. I did a nail gun routine, a staple gun routine. I walked on broken glass. I ate fire.
You have the world records for fire eating, don't you?
Yeah, I have a world record for fire eating. 2 minutes and 1 second holding fire in your teeth. But I think it's about to be broken, or it was broken, or it's somewhere around that. I don't think I'm going to have it for very long if I still do have it.
Yeah.
But it's fine. It's just about, you know, they put my big picture in the book and it was very exciting and,
cool.
You know, it was cool. And I'm going to work on more world records. But sideshow was great. It was wonderful. It was a wonderful community, and it, you know, you can't do sideshow if you're not funny. And so it really kicked my butt and made me get funny. Mm-hmm. And then after I won the world record, I came home from Italy from the TV show. And I just remember sitting there going, what am I doing? I was 25. It's 5 years ago. And I remember thinking, like, man, I've trained acrobatics in 3 countries, and I've done sideshow for years, and it's all corporate. Like, I was doing corporate sideshow. That was my thing. Finding ways to make it clean enough that I could sell it to the oil and gas community as a holiday party. And I was good at that. And then, you know, I was like, okay, well, there's this 3-week theater intensive, and I signed up and I got in, and I was shocked I got in because they don't tend to take non-traditional acts like myself. And the whole theme of it was, who are you now as an artist? And the thing that kept coming back to me was how much I've always loved magic and how it was my first love. And then it was just like 3 weeks of me going, okay, so So that's what I'm doing now, I guess. And it was so scary.
So how old were you at that point?
25.
So from 7, 8-year-old who goes, oh, screw it, I'm throwing away the tricks. I'm going to, because no one's interested in my hobby.
Exactly.
To 25. Did at any point in that time you call yourself a magician?
Never.
Or you were at best an assistant?
At best I was an assistant. And the crazy thing was that I remember at 23 doing a gig, this bar gig, and sold it as sideshow. And I was doing needle through arm, which is a magic trick.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing razor blades, which was a magic trick. And I did a card trick. And I did this whole bar show. It was really great. And then afterwards, the client came up to me and she went, hey, I just want you to know this was a great show. You're super funny. We really loved it. In the future, you know, we just would like to know that we're getting a magician and not really a sideshow performer. And I went, oh, because I also ate fire and walked on burned glass in that show. But she had just perceived, because I pulled out that card trick, she just thought it was all magic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember thinking, wait, am I a magician? No, I couldn't. I'm not a magician. No, that lady doesn't know things. And then 2 years later, I was like, oh, no, I am a magician.
Do you know
what
you sound like you're coming out as gay?
It's exactly what it felt like.
In many ways, I knew from when I was a young kid, and I wasn't like the other children.
I wasn't like them.
And then one day someone said, oh, my God, I think mom, dad, sit down. I need to tell you something.
Oh, that's so funny.
I'm a magician.
Yep.
You're not going to have children.
Yeah.
And so now, okay, so you do, because of your background, because it's theatre, you've got sideshow, mm-hmm. comedy, while you are a magician, it does feel, watching you perform, that you're not tied too closely to the traditions of magic, in that you're quite happy to do character, you're quite happy to do jokes, you're quite happy to do, like you said, you're quite happy to do sideshow. You're not a performer who, because in magic, I mean, obviously there's two things as a magician you do. One is you create the illusion you can do impossible stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's all the other baggage that goes with it, and the way in which magicians talk and act and present themselves, which I think we learn from copying other people. But because you kind of stamped yourself as a magician fairly late in the game, you don't seem necessarily weighed down by all that kind of traditional baggage that the rest of us have.
Absolutely. I'm quite grateful for that, because I admire all those things. I mean, I remember seeing Danny D'Ortiz yesterday, this amazing card magician, and just it was just so great. I left that room feeling like, why am I even doing this?
Who am I? Clearly the best. Yeah.
I should just give up.
Yep.
And so I feel like I'm in this really wonderful place where I can appreciate and understand and speak. I've been around long enough now that I know all the names and I can speak the language and I know all the names of the moves for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Every once in a while someone says something, I'm like, okay, you're gonna have to explain that to me, because I haven't been doing it since I was 2, like everyone else. But I'm so grateful as well to have like that side, and then also look at a trick. You know, there's this classic trick, Sands of Egypt, that no one does anymore because it's dumb, and I redesigned it for this show here. And I think that's the one that the magicians have commented on the most, even though it's a very simple trick.
Mm.
Because I come from theater, because I come from sideshow, because I was doing a character piece, I could bring it back out in a totally different context and get like gasps from the audience. And I think it was really fun watching the magicians in the audience be like, really? That's getting gasps? Why?
Yeah.
It was kind of great.
I saw the other night Simon Coronel get gasps from the jumping rubber band.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you put a rubber band on your index finger and your middle finger, and then they jump to your little finger. You know, it's like, yeah, it's in every kid's magic book, and he's getting gasps. And that's only the first phase of his routine. But it's like, so presentation is everything.
Mm-hmm.
So based on what you've said, I mean, obviously, as someone who is, you know, a woman in a traditionally male-dominated field, and as someone who has been down the sideshow route and the theatre route and all these other routes, and someone who, you know, as you said, stamped themselves as a magician fairly late compared with people who, mm-hmm. you know, with a teenage magician, you could be forgiven for sort of feeling like an outsider, but you don't seem to feel that way. You say you feel, for the most part, quite included in the magic community.
Yeah, I think that the magic community wants passion. That's what they ask. They don't ask for you to know everything. And they don't ask for you to be able to do everything, which I only realized in the last couple of years, because I remember the first, you know, 3 years of like really committing to magic. And I already had quite a body of knowledge from doing illusions and from the magic that was in my show before. So that really helped, and just, you know, my interest. So it wasn't like I was starting from zero, which was very helpful. But still, there's tons of things people were saying and I couldn't keep up.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, in the last couple of years, I've realized that it's the passion that people respect.
Mm.
And it's the being a worker. It's the fact that I do 200 gigs a year and I work my butt off and I fly all over the world and I stage manage Magic Live and I try to be part of everything. And so,
and you make money and you I'm don't like, have another money. Job. Yeah.
Yeah. This is my full-time job and it has been for 15 years.
Ian Rowland is a, Scottish somewhere over there. One of those countries. He came and saw me perform when I was like 19 and I got up and I was doing all these tricks that I knew were sort of maybe like fairly simple and easy to do, and there was no way I was ever going to fool this world-class mentalist. And afterwards, I was like, oh, you know, it's just my dumb little tricks. And he's going, well, like, how old are you? And I said, I'm 19, 20. And I go, and what do you do? And I go, this is my job. This is all I do. Like, I support myself doing magic and I'm studying. And he's like, well, you're like way ahead of like 99% of other magicians because you make a living doing it. So, like, just embrace it.
Yeah, totally.
Have that confidence. So then let's, despite the fact you have felt welcomed as a girl in the magic shop.
As a lady.
there are obstacles to being a woman in magic. One we were talking about just before is the fact that women's clothes, and this is me and my, you know, like lack of wokeness, is that I only recently learned in the last couple of years that women's clothing has either insufficient or no pockets.
No pockets.
Even if they often look like they have more pockets.
But there's no pockets.
There's no pockets.
They're not real.
They're not, yeah. They're
it's just usually a pockets. Strip of fabric that's like to allude to the idea that there's a pocket.
Yeah, or like it's like 2 or 3 centimeters deep.
But it's not just the no pockets. It's the no pockets plus the fashion being that everything be skin tight.
Mm.
So even if you were to sew a pocket in, you could see the load, right? Which is, you know, for non-magicians, put... That's the thing I'm trying to steal and make it look like I appeared it because magic's not real, guys. but if I put the thing in a pocket, that even if I sew a pocket in, it looks like I got a dove in my pants. Like, there's no hiding that.
Yeah,
so it's been a challenge.
And also, like, you know, you can't hide things up your sleeve.
No sleeve. Yeah, my character, Lucy Darling, is pretty... I've embraced that with Lucy Darling. The costume has no loads. The tables, where I built all the tables myself, and the tables contain all the loads.
They're the ones that do all the hard work.
They do the hard work. Yeah. Because at a certain point, I tried to, my first costume for her, I had built stuff into the bra pocket, you know, stuff into the butt bustle. And I don't know if people want to look me up, there's a parasol production routine I created that parasol production is usually done with a man wearing a suit jacket. And I remember watching parasols and thinking that there was this dichotomy between how much I adored the visual of pow, parasol, but then the magicians would just throw it on the ground like, look, I've made this amazing thing, I don't need it. Look, another amazing thing, I don't need this one either. It's like, why are you making these things appear if you don't care for them? What is the point of this effect? And it was so frustrating. And so I thought, okay, what, how can I rewrite that? I came up with this concept of like doing a dance number where I'm producing these and me and this guy are dancing with them. And then I end up stacking them all over his body so that he's like can barely hold them. And there's one between his legs and there's great comedy there. And there's two under his armpits that make him look like boobs. And it's just a great routine. And but it started from this idea of like, well, that was the routine. So then how do I do that? Because I can't do that and wear a suit jacket. I can't.
Yeah.
So I built a, not to give it away too much, but I built it so that I could do it in a mini skirt and a corset. And so I can appear 8 full-size parasols out of a...
Umbrellas.
Yes. Yeah. Umbrellas.
Yeah.
And it was great. And that was one of those fun ones where I remember talking to a magician afterwards, and he's like, your table loads are amazing. And I was just like, there's no table loads. I am wearing 8 parasols when I walk on that stage. They're up my butt. Not fun. So yeah, it's frustrating.
And that kind of practical stuff is things that I don't need to think about because it goes in my pocket. And any time I try and learn an existing routine or come up, it's made for me. It's made for my white middle class body.
Right.
So that I just don't need to sort of look at that obstacle. Do you find that often? I've noted a lot of women that, because I mentioned I was talking to you to a few women magicians that I know. Some of them basically have said they just have no problems at all being women in magic. It's not an issue for them. They just get out there and do it. And the only time it really comes up is they often use it in their, you know, they refer to themselves as the leading female magician in Victoria, or which I always feel like adding female in that context. I don't know. What do you think? Does that feel a bit like a qualifier? Mm. Like rather than being, I'm the best magician in the world, I'm the best female magician in the world. Like it's as if that
quality, you know, oh, in this specific demographic, I'm really good. It's, I mean, like, no one would ever say I'm the best magician under 6 foot, or I'm the best white magician in the world.
But they would say I'm the best Asian magician, right?
Would they?
They would. Because I think that...
They might say I'm the best magician in Asia.
In Asia.
Asian,
yeah, there you
magician,
go.
Really?
Well, the best... You're probably right. The best magician in Asia.
Who's the best Asian magician?
Oh, God. I don't know. I don't know.
They're so good.
They're all so good.
Is that
good.
Racist? Can but I say
they're Asian good, magician? But they're also good in a way that, like, it's just a very different style,
yes,
right?
That is true,
Spain,
yeah.
Spain magic is a very different style.
That's true. You have Asian magic. So the idea of, like, women's magic...
I think that if people want to self-identify as a woman in magic,
yeah,
then and own that, good for them. Do
oh,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think it's necessarily a qualifier unless you're making it a qualifier.
Yes.
I think it's an attitude. If you go, well, I'm the best woman in magic, then you are hold. Then there is something implied there that says you are holding yourself potentially to a lower standard.
Yeah.
But if you say, I am the best, period. Woman.
Sorry, the best.
I'm the best, period.
Woman's magic.
Yeah, that was the best, period. Yeah. Women's magic. I'm the best, comma. Yeah. And separately, I happen to be a woman of magic, and that you're proud of that.
Yes.
Then that's great.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's the distinction I was trying to make was that, I mean, again, I don't mean to, you know, let me tell women how they should market themselves in magic. But just the idea of using like a characteristic that about you that shouldn't be a defining feature of your quality.
Well, but
I mean, it could be of your act.
I was going to say, look at my act, though. Like,
yeah.
Lucy Darling, the character I've created for this, is so overtly feminine.
Yeah.
Which is so funny, because you've seen me walk around the convention, and I'm, like, wearing pants and no makeup, and I haven't brushed my hair in 2 days. Right? Lucy is not who I am.
That does imply that Lucy, on stage, wears, like, hair and makeup and no pants.
And that is true.
Yeah, to an
she,
extent,
that
yeah.
is exactly... She wears the biggest hair you've ever seen... 18 layers of makeup and no pants.
No pants.
That's who yep. she is.
Just a t-shirt.
Yeah, she Donald Ducks it the whole show.
That'd be an amazing show. Because yeah. I've seen there's a couple of like nude reviews of like magic shows, but just the idea of a magician who's naked. Because there's the naked magicians, a couple of guys.
Oh, right.
They do kind of a standard magic show. Like it's pretty sort of out of the box corporate act. They just nude the whole time doing double entendres. But they're all buff and they've got their, you know, chiseled abs and things, but the idea of like they're just wearing t-shirts or maybe like suit jackets and ties,
suit jackets,
you know, like
and
a
they do a
shirt. Delft
production out of a suit jacket but no pants,
just no pants.
I'd pay anything to see that.
Socks and shoes, of course.
That sounds great
because it's a formal event.
Oh, that's just so funny.
Yeah, just wang and the ultimate misdirection.
And they do the helicopter every time they have to do a sneaky
I
move.
Think these I haven't seen the act. I think these guys may do that kind of
oh god
thing. I think they finish by
They finish, do they? In the
well,
show,
they
finish.
They do finish. And
sounds
they,
messy.
It is messy. And it is. They say, I haven't seen it, but apparently there's something along the lines of, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for coming. Now we would like to come for you. And then they do Snowstorm in China, which
oh,
is basically
God.
Producing large amounts of white confetti while appearing to masturbate on stage. That's what I've heard. That's if the legends are true, then... Yeah.
Well,
we need to do an episode of Scam and Palooza on men in magic.
Yeah, the kinds of men in magic. So, speaking of which, I will say one thing is that as a woman in magic, considering I represent all women,
speaking
in magic,
for all women,
for
in
all
magic.
Women in magic,
yes.
What I do run into a lot is people tend to ask me, especially after they see my act, they tend to ask me if I think that women, if there are like women, high quality women in magic, or if mostly the women in magic suck. I get that a lot, that question a lot. And my response is always, well, look, when you got into magic, you were 6, you were encouraged every step of the way, and now you're 45. A woman in magic doesn't get to start usually until her 20s because nobody gives a little girl a magic kit, and then you're irrelevant by the time you're 45 sometimes, or at least it feels that way. I don't think that's true. I obviously don't think that's true.
No, no, no. Yeah.
But I think as a woman in magic, I feel like I've got a much tighter timeline, right? I'm 30 now, and I want to be doing this until I'm 80.
Yeah.
But I don't know that I'm not an idiot. Entertainment is a visual medium. It's different for women.
Yeah.
And so you're telling me, oh, there's no good women in magic. Well, we don't have the timeline that men do.
Yeah.
And so, and also, I find a lot of men do, we've got our Darren Brown, and so then you get all your Darren Brown-y kind of guys. You've got your David Copperfields, you get all your David Copperfield-y kind of guys. You have these men that can take these figures and sculpt them around themselves. Whereas as a woman in magic, when I sat down and I was like, who am I as a magician? I didn't have anyone really to look to. You know, I could be Melinda or... yeah. Right? Yeah. I don't want to be Melinda. She's lovely, but it's not who I am. I mean, I don't have the same kind of archetypes. So it's a harder start.
Yeah.
So you start later. You get a little less support when you start. And then you have to kind of invent things from scratch a lot more. It's just a bigger uphill climb. And so when people are like, oh, the women aren't as good in magic. There's not as many good women in magic. And I'm like, yeah, of course there aren't.
Yeah.
It's a very different game.
But that's it. And there's that thing that is often used as to explain to people that, you know, the difference between men and women's experience in life is that you know, it's like a video game and there are obstacles in that video game and everyone has to face the same obstacles and everyone has similar obstacles and similar things to face, but men are playing it on the slightly easier level, you know, version, and women are just playing the game on a harder version. Mm-hmm. And depending on the woman or the man, depends on how hard or easy that game is. And so often it looks like people are playing the same game, but they're not.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's a great analogy.
Yeah, it's not mine. But and that's used just in general. But I think in magic, the pockets thing. I know we joked about it, but that's like, I cannot do a single thing in my, I just finished The Confidence Artist, rave reviews, by the way.
I heard very good things.
But I could not do that act. I could not do a single thing in that, like I couldn't teach about a cheat at cards, a short con, the long con, the whole thing, that entire 60 minutes requires, every single step of the way requires me to have pockets. Mm. So if I don't have pockets, I'm dead in the water. So that is just, it's a horrifying thing for me to even have to think about.
About writing an act with no pockets.
Writing an act without pockets, let alone all the other stuff you just talked about.
Yeah, no thumb tips made for women. You can't wear, you can't do Dove loads out of a suit jacket. You can't buy any ready-made toppet ever.
Yeah, you can't buy anything that is, you can't, most costume change stuff that is, you know, like, you know, gaffed. Totally. You can't buy any color-changing ties or things.
I was working on this bra. I was going to send one to Kayla Drescher, actually. I still might. I was working on this silicone bra toppet that you could, like, flick a coin and vanish it in front of you, and it would end up in your bra, and then it would go through a thing and end up kind of in the little pocket in your vest.
Yeah, cool.
So you could, like, have a signed coin, vanish it, and it's in your pocket.
Great.
But it didn't. It's a great idea. Beautiful gimmick. I'm so proud of it. I worked with this designer. We made a great... And it doesn't work. Because do you know where people are looking when you're vanishing a coin right here?
At your boobs?
At your boobs. Yeah. So you would think the one... it's so funny because everyone's like, oh, just hide stuff in your boobs. And I was like, of course.
The one
built
place boobs.
This stupid thing, spent tons of money on this, took it out, walk around, didn't fool a single person. And I'd been working on this for a year.
Yeah.
And just realized, and then finally brought it up to some magicians and they're like, you know why that's not working? It's because as soon as you frame your hands up in front of you at chest level so you can get that coin in there, even if it's invisible... They were looking at your boobs. They're burning your boobs. They're just looking at your boobs the whole time.
So we've talked before on the podcast about the psychology of magic and the, you know, controlling the gaze and all of that kind of thing.
You want to control gay people?
I do want to control the gaze. That's right.
That can't be the first time that joke has been on the show. I hate myself. I'm sorry.
You know, controlling where people are looking and inattentional blindness. I would love to set up someone vanishes a coin, set them up with an eye tracker. So it's like a thing that holds your head still and then records where you're looking, and so it's like a little red dot that's kind of moving around, leaving a little trail like a comet behind it, so you can see where people are looking and you can see what magic tricks are effective and what aren't. Psychologists use it, and in advertisers use it to see where people are looking on web pages and stuff. Anyway, we've talked about it before on the podcast, but it'll be interesting to get a male magician and a female magician dressed in their performing gear doing exactly the same move, like just vanish a coin with a French drop, whatever, and see where people's eyes are going and actually see whether, do we look a female magician in the face more than we do a male magician? Do, you know, like whether there is actually any difference?
Well, I think for me, that's part of why I've done so much work towards doing comedy magic and character-driven magic, because the control that a strong character has on stage negates any gender differences, I think.
Yeah.
Because a big elaborate character will make you do whatever they want, because this is not your world anymore. This is their world, and there are different rules, and you're just trying to keep up.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also some subtle things, like, for example, in this show, there's a table. I built a long table, and we were going to make the table super, super thin. But my character is just legs all the way up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we created a table. We had, even though it's less deceptive, we had to put like a cloth around the table a little bit, because when I'm doing those effects, I need them to not be able to see my legs, because we were noticing that we did it a couple of bars, not in character, but just the trick on its own. It would split the focus. There would be some people looking at the legs of my, you know, bare quote unquote three pairs of dance tights legs, and not looking at the effect, and in that moment they would think, well, I looked away for a second and that's when she did the thing.
Yeah.
Whereas
even if they're not thinking it consciously, there's not that clarity.
And so now when I'm doing any kind of thing, one, I pause, I really stay very still to try not to like shimmy or anything and draw focus. Right. And but then also I stand behind the table. And then when I'm trying to be, you know, when I'm trying to play the character, I stand beside the table. And so I have to make these deliberate choices in my blocking about, OK, well, if I walk to the side of the table and they can see my legs, that's going to pull focus for some people.
Mm.
And is that, do I want that because I'm trying to do a steal, or do I not want that because right now I'm clean and I've done all the dirty work and I want them to focus?
Yeah. You could flip it, and you could, I don't know, like there's a classic trick in magic, the card in mouth.
Yeah, yeah, of
you
course.
Know, like every magician does it, where the sign card's in the deck and he's telling you've made it jump to the top of the deck, you know, a million times, and now they're burning the deck, and the card goes into the middle and then it disappears and they look up and it's in your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do it, there's often people who notice it before the person, and they start giggling because they can see there's a card in my mouth and the person I'm doing the trick on can't see it. But it'd be interesting to do that if you put it, just tucked it into the top of your cleavage.
Ugh.
And to see how quickly people, like, do they notice it more?
I feel like they notice it right away.
They notice it right away.
I don't know.
Straight away.
It'd be worth trying. I mean, I think in order for that to work, if I'm being completely honest, I just have to be a better card magician.
That is true.
You know, I've only got 45 minutes of cards. I've got maybe 8 flourishes.
Uh-huh.
I'm a pretty basic level. You know,
yeah, but the stuff you do well, like, isn't that, I mean, the idea, it's not,
yes,
it's not how much
idea.
You know, it's how well you do.
Well,
the stuff
and that
you
comes
do.
From circus for me, is that, yeah. Like, my, I'm so grateful for having studied circus, and these places that had these work ethic, mm-hmm. work, you know, work kind of mentalities, these cultures, these aggressive workaholic cultures.
Yeah.
Because now
yeah.
when I pick up a trick, when I'm like, oh, you know, my chop cup routine, you saw a couple of times.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of moves in it, but the moves that are in it are pretty tight.
Yeah.
You know, and I try really, really hard to make sure they're super, super tight. Because
yeah.
if there's only one move in that whole routine, then it's going to be slick as hell.
Yeah.
And I'm going to practice it the way I would practice a circus thing.
Yeah. That's circus folk, I mean, magic is about cutting corners. That's mm-hmm. the whole, you know, like, oh man, I'm
getting. Sometimes literally.
There's a little joke for the magicians. The, you know, like magic, oh, I want to perform miracles, but I can't. Oh, I'll just cheat and you know, all of the cards are the same or whatever. And so it's easy sometimes to just say, oh, I'll just, what is the easy way to do it
mm-hmm.
as opposed to doing it properly? Anyway, okay, so this has all come to a head in the last few days, though, for you, where you have now become some sort of political figure and some kind of representative of women in magic because of your salacious appearance in Vanish magazine.
Yep.
What happened?
So, okay, there are two answers. The answer, first answer is I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And the other answer is that a few months ago, I've been working on this article for months, and I submitted it to Genie, and I submitted it to Vanish, I submitted it to a few places. And it was an article about hypnosis and how about, you know, as a woman, we might want to look at the narrative of hypnosis and decide if it's a little, if it could be potentially received as an allegory for consent. Because sometimes what happens in a hypnosis show is that a woman specifically is hypnotized and therefore removed of her ability to consent and then made to do pseudosexual acts for the enjoyment of strangers.
Yeah.
And that's a little rapey.
Yes.
Just a little bit.
Yeah.
And so I just wrote an article and it was huge. Like, it was very well received and also very poorly received, and it was a little bit scandalous.
By hypnotists.
Hypnotists, magicians. Because what ended up happening was that the people who thought it was wrong,
yeah,
attacked my knowledge. They started with, she doesn't know what she's talking about, which then offended a lot of the people in magic who are like, no, Carissa knows what she's talking about. She's incredibly well-read. And then the people who already don't like hypnosis were given a vocabulary to talk about how they don't like hypnosis. And so none of the backlash came towards me. The backlash was entirely independent of me. It was people using my words to defend my points and then defending me separately. I didn't have to participate in it at all. It was great. And Paul, who runs Vanish, was
Paul Romney.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Was lovely.
Yeah.
Was super excited about the controversy. And then they offered me a feature, a cover. And I, you know, have a background in art school as well. I did a few years at art school. And so I offered to do the layout myself. And my mentor, Amberlyn Walker, who's this amazing photographer and also a female magician, she came up with this great concept to do this American Beauty reference image with cards. We shot it in my living room. And this, we shot this like a year ago. We shot this a while ago before we were even offered the cover. And it's a beautiful image. Amber did a great job.
So it's basically playing cards all over the ground.
Yes.
You're laying, I assume, naked. Who knows?
Naked. Yes, naked. I was naked.
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 With playing cards on you as well.
Yeah.
Like Mira Savina?
Yeah.
Whatever her name, in American Beauty. American with the Beauty. Rose petals.
Exactly. Okay, so you can't see anything.
Yeah.
But and we made a lot of very deliberate choices about that image. No high heels. No overdone makeup. Mm-hmm. No overly sexual pose. We made a lot of choices to make sure that it was perceived as this is a pop culture reference, this is playful, this is a cute little thing. It's fun. And also gorgeous.
Were they artistic or political choices?
They were both. They were both artistic and political choices because we didn't want to make it overly sexual. So Paul and I talked about it. Amber and I talked about it. You know, also because the article is called The 15-Year Overnight Sensation, talking about how, you know, people are only just figuring out who I am now, even more so because of the stupid article. But I've been here for 15 years. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been around for a long time. And I mean, there are certain magicians who've been hanging out with me, certain like big deal magicians who've been hanging out with me for 10 years already, because I've always been in the background.
Yeah.
Even as an assistant, I was like, you know, because I would listen to people's podcasts, magicians' podcasts in my early 20s, and Sideshow would have something to offer them as a solution to a magic thing, and I would message them. So there are a ton of like famous magicians that I've been talking to for 10 years. And so we did this article. It seemed appropriate because the layout is all top down and it just made sense, right? And it looked like a good photo and Paul was all over it. And we talked about how it would probably be controversial. And I thought, you know what? There's the naked magicians. And we also included, Amber and I did a photo, which is a reference to the Houdini and Chains photo, which is on the last page of the article.
Mm-hmm.
And that photo was meant to be a subtle reference to the fact that Houdini posed in his underpants, basically naked, in the 1800s. And everyone was fine with that. So if I can't be on a cover of a magic magazine naked as a woman, then this is clearly a double standard. Mm-hmm. And it was this little visual subtle thing that we put in there, right? That Houdini and Chains photo, which is the last photo.
Yeah.
And I thought I just assumed that that would be fine, that it would be no big deal. And, or that the outpouring would be against the hyper-conservative men in our community.
Who basically think there shouldn't be?
There shouldn't be.
You shouldn't have. you shouldn't be bringing magic into dispute by.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you should be.
Like women, they don't like women being here, let alone a woman in her nudie pants.
Yeah, which to be fair, I think is those now the men like that, which is just kind of what you would imagine. The kind of you know the old magician sitting there like in his tuxedo and his big curly moustache. You know, saying, a woman in magic, and then his monocle falls out.
Yeah. Oh, my.
Even in those trousers. You know, that kind of, like there are men, of course, like that, but there's few and far between. It's much
subtler.
It's
very rare. But that was what I was afraid of, because in my mind, I thought, I mean, I've never met, like you're saying, I've never met those magicians.
Yeah.
But I imagine they exist somewhere. And so the article comes out. It's out for 3 days. I'm out here in Melbourne doing this show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm distracted.
And this is the last 3 days, we should say.
This is the last 3 days.
Yeah.
Nothing happened for the first couple of days the article was out. And then my friend Anastasia Sin, who is this passionate, well-spoken woman who also happens to be married to amazing Jonathan, got wind of these secret messages on people's Facebook pages from women in the magic community saying that this hurts all women. This changes the way we know it's already so hard for us to be taken seriously and we're totally discriminated against. And this is going to make it worse because if one person poses like this, then everyone will be expected to and blah, 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 blah. And, mm-hmm. and Anastasia came because Anna's good friends with myself and Amber. So the photographer and magician, Amberlyn Walker and myself, and Anna lost her mind over it. She was so upset. And rightly so, because Anastasia's also a really talented woman in magic. And we were cool with this. And it was frustrating to see these messages and have them say, oh, well, this affects me personally, blah, blah, blah.
But these were private messages, the people that sort of were talking behind your back.
Yeah, like on women's forums that I had not been invited to, or on their Facebook pages. And,
okay.
And Anna started to find them. And so then as soon as Anna found a couple and started responding to them, people started sending her more. And then it became apparent that this cover that we thought everyone was cool with, people had been complaining about, but very quietly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the quiet became loud and it got a megaphone and it went nuts. And I remember, I think you were here when I first got my first message. It was the middle of the day because the time difference, right?
Yeah.
And I got myself a cup of coffee and I was getting prepped for my show. And all of a sudden my phone goes buzz, 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 buzz every 4 seconds for about 6.5 hours. Messages, screen captures of things from other people's pages, angry messages from women, apologies from those same women, some of them.
Yeah.
But I'm working, so I didn't participate in the debate. I let Anna's very well spoken. She's an intelligent woman. I trust her. Amberlynn is a very well spoken, intelligent woman. I trust her. And they just let the debate rage on. And now, in 10 days, that cover, that magazine, has had more downloads than any other issue of Vanish, including the Criss Angel issue. Because people are like, this is the end of magic. My butt broke magic, apparently forever.
That can be your next article.
Yeah.
I'll be devil's advocate.
Do it.
Okay, I'll be Love devil's it. Advocate. You should be ashamed of yourself.
I should be ashamed of myself.
My church group is going to... that is something, though, that does... That plays out a lot in modern... I mean, okay, one, it's on social media, mm-hmm. and people are jerks on social media. Yeah? Like, that's something. Like, I am a jerk on social media, and I feel bad about it, and I come back and I see... people comment on things that I said months ago, and I go, what a horrible thing to say. Why would I say that? So, is there a part of you that says, I shouldn't take this too seriously, because there are people who have this immediate, weird, you know, reaction, or they need to think through their feelings, and they've done it in a semi-private way, and like you said, some of them came and apologized. So is that just this horrible thing that we have now, people having a reaction, and the way in which they work through that reaction or think about it and discuss it is by shouting off the top of virtual buildings at one another? And
well, the first thing I should say is that, you know, because I have an art school background, and I'm, you know, the other reason we did this image is because I'm a model. Like, I'm a nude model back home. I work at the college. I do figure modeling. And so this photo also had some contextual reasons why it was a good idea. I'm not upset. Because it's art.
I'm not upset.
I'm not upset. Because you learn in college to recognize that when people criticize your artwork, they're not criticizing you. Yeah. And so people's offense at this is not about me. It's about this picture. And the picture is something I helped create, but it isn't who I am. And so I've not been personally offended by anyone. And I agree. I think that sometimes people go online and they have their immediate reaction, rah, 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 angry, angry. And I have gotten lots of apologies. And I think what deserves credit is that overwhelmingly, men have been nothing but supportive. And overwhelmingly, the critiques from women have been incredibly well-worded and incredibly generous. You know, a lot of them are very specifically about, you know, I have nothing against Carissa, I think she's very talented, or I've never met her, but this image. And I think that I want to give a lot of credit to that, because what you're saying is right. People go on social media and they're jerks, and they can say whatever they want. And I was very impressed to see how restrained people had been. Even the angriest messages are still, in a lot of ways, very generous.
Yeah. Okay. Again, I'm going to be the devil's advocate.
Do it.
But if we do the classic gender reversal, and it's a dude in that same situation. Again, the naked magicians. So those guys have got their naked bodies everywhere.
Oh, yes.
We're all over the internet, everywhere. And there are a few people who think that it's a bit, like, cheesy and a bit lame because it's, just doing magic with your shirt off and your pants off. But there is no political, you know, undertone to it. There's no, people might just think it's a bit gross or a bit lame, and that's it. But because you are a woman, what you do is now is publicly, what you do is put under this this microscope of public scrutiny, and you're made to question it and come on dumb podcasts and talk to Australian jerks and about who you are and what you're about. And instead of just you know, showing, said, this is who I am. Here is this photograph. Here is this article. You're expected to stand up for yourself or have other people stand up for you. You're expect, you're put under scrutiny that other, that a male magician in the same situation wouldn't be.
That's
very true. So, while people sound like they're being reasonably pleasant now that it's become a little bit more public, the fact that it is an issue, the fact that you as a woman have to justify your choices that you're making, doesn't that piss you off just a little bit?
It does piss me off. Absolutely. It's frustrating.
So who pisses you off the most? Name names and home addresses.
I think the thing that to recognize is it's like I think this podcast is going to tie it together very nicely because I'm just going to bring in the thing we were talking about before. As much as I try really hard not to use being a woman as an excuse for not trying as hard as everyone else, it is harder. It's harder. And sometimes you're in a situation where someone flirts with you and it's intimidating and I'm fine with that, mm-hmm. but not everyone is.
Yes.
And I'm comfortable using my sexuality as a tool in my performance and not everyone is. And these comments are coming from I don't know this for sure, but I would imagine that some of them are coming from a place of fear. This fear that this thing they love, they'll never be able to be successful in it because no one's going to take them seriously. And every time something comes up that reinforces that thought, because we're not rational creatures, we're rationalizing creatures. So when you see you're not getting the gigs or the sexy ladies are getting the gigs and you're not, or these things, you've got confirmation bias. You're thinking, well, the reason is because we're being exploited or because nobody appreciates us or this. And so if you've already decided that that's the world of magic, then you're looking for reasons to believe that you're right. And I think a lot of people saw this image and thought, see, this is proof that they don't take us seriously. Not realizing this is a female magician who took a photo of another female magician. We wrote the article. We decided what it was going to be. It was totally our choice. We, you know, Paul said, sure. He didn't make any of these choices. And I think for me, this is a representation of the fact that we're at the point now in magic where we can do whatever the hell we want. It's over, right? If we want it to be over, if we want the age of the equal lady magicians to come, we just have to work our butts off and we can have it. Because the pressure and the fear and all that stuff, I think some of it's become internalized in the women in magic. And we need to trust each other and stand up together and be like, no. We've decided this doesn't exist anymore and start working towards the kind of world we want to work in.
It does. It sounds a little bit like you think that there are not actually that many jerks out there, both male and female. Like,
I don't.
There's not that many jerks. It's just kind of a crappy system that we're all trying to be successful and we're all trying to do our best. And maybe we work together. And this is not just men and women, but women and women and men, rather than trying to kind of prove points and score points. We'd all be a little bit better.
I think we just need to, you know what hurts women in magic? Bad magic.
Tight pants. Oh, damn it.
No, tight pants. I did a Kadabra lecture a couple years ago with really tight pants and that ended up being an issue as well. This is not the first time I have caused this kind of controversy. But I think that, no, if the only thing that's, at this point, I really believe this. I love this community and I've been part of it for long enough and in a deep enough way that I've met a lot of people and I've never once, and I tell you this in the article, I've never once felt discriminated against because of my gender or my lifestyle, or my sexuality. Not once. And if people do feel discriminated, I'm not going to rewrite their narrative. Totally, you were discriminated if that's how you feel. But I wasn't. It's not my story. And I won't change my behavior because of something that happened to someone else. Because this is the reality I live in magic, is that I'm very well respected and I'm taken good care of and I'm lucky. And I won't change my behavior because someone else is scared.
Well, I've tried my best. But it sounds like I failed.
You failed to what?
To make you change your
behavior. To make me change my behavior.
Yes.
Put your pants on, Grizzly.
Put your pants on. Oh, yeah, sorry. We should have explained. We're Donald Ducky.
Oh, yeah, we're Donald Ducky.
We're new from the waist down right now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Of course. So thank you very much.
This has been Scammapalooza. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson. Don't forget to check out conman.com.au for more information on the show.